Welcome to the Shir Parshas HaShavua in Aksava Kabbalah Parshas Bo. Just before we begin, in Parshas Bo, the author of the Aksava Kabbalah, Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, really starts to demonstrate his greatness, not just as a commentary on the Chumash, but as a rabbinic scholar, a Talmudic scholar in the classic sense of the term. Parshas Bo, of course, is really the first Sedra in Chumash, where you really have extensive halachic discussions, and in the course of his comments on those sections of Chumash dealing with the halachos of Pesach, Matzah, Karban Pesach, and the like, the Aksava Kabbalah really, in a sense, gets down and gets dirty, really discussing, really at great length, issues that come up not just from the point of view of explaining the Pesukim, but a lot of what we consider classic Talmudic discussions. So, you know, there's a difficult Rambam that needs to be explained, the number of passages where he mentions the Shagas Aryeh, who was roughly a contemporary of the Aksava Kabbalah, and he takes issue with various different statements that classic Lomdische Sefer has. My plan tonight is not to look at those portions of Parshas Bo, but really to stick to what we've been doing in the past, meaning the parts of the Aksava Kabbalah that are focused on the narrative, on the diktuk and the like. But I do think it's important just at the outset to mention that those passages are there and show that the Aksava Kabbalah really was comfortable in various different, what we call mixolos ha-Torah, you know, various different aspects of Torah interpretation. Thank you very much.
So you get a hope.
What's that?
So you get a hope.
No,
stuff.
I give you hope. Stuff. It means I give you homework, you know, to do after you go home tonight, you know. So I want to start with a passage from the Aksava Kabbalah that is a very different take on the way we normally understand something. It involves a very different linguistic interpretation, but also helps us understand in a somewhat new way a passage from the Haggadah in Perek Yud around Pasuk Chav Gimel. The Psukim describe the Makas Choshech, right, the plague of darkness that struck Mitzrayim. In the Pasuk Chav Gimel we're told Lo Ra'u Ishes Achiv V'lo Kamu Ish Mitachtov Shloshes Yomim. No one could see his fellow during the plague of darkness, and no one was able to stand up from underneath himself. In other words, the Egyptians were frozen in place. No one was able to get up for the duration of 3 days. Nonetheless, for all of the Jewish people, they had light in all of their houses. On that phrase, "V'lo kamu ish mitachtov shloshes yomim," that no one was able to get up. And the people were, again, simple pshat is they were frozen in place. The Egyptians were frozen in place for 3 days. The Aksava Kabbalah writes as follows: Rabbim yismahu. Many are astounded by this pasuk. Halo ein miderach hachoshef le'estores ha'adam b'masar ad shelo yuchal akum mimakom moshava. Okay, I get it. It was dark. But darkness doesn't prevent you from moving around. It doesn't make you a prisoner. Maybe it makes it uncomfortable to move around, but you're physically able to move. I mean, even a blind person, you can move around, you know, you touch the things around you to try to get a sense of your surroundings. But why were the Egyptians immobilized? Because of the darkness. The im hayom yisibes edim v'kitarim v'chupolim. So Aksava Kabbalah says, look, maybe you'll give me the following scientific explanation. Again, in the end of the day, if you say that that's a miracle, that that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this choshech, that it just froze them in place, okay, not much to talk about, you know, once you just invoke the miracle. But if you want to try to understand it in such a way that it fits in any way with the phenomena of darkness, the way we're familiar with it, says the Aksava Kabbalah, let's say you'll tell me that this darkness was made by some kind of very dense environmental substances, you know, edim, vapors, the kitorim, and smokes that thickened the atmosphere, adlo yuchlu lakum, to the point that they were unable to stand up, right? That somehow part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did during the Makov Choshech was to thicken the air. In Kain Ech Shoafu Ruach, Hello, Kirega Yomusu, Me'afisas Ruach Hanashima. If the air was so thick, he asks, how did they breathe? Why didn't they just drop dead from lack of air? If that's what was going on. The Ein Lomar Kaharal Bag, Shahayu Mukrochim Liston Nikve Ha'afa Pek, Bederach Shloikani Se Ha'avir, Ha'ed Hakitari Toch Gufam Vim Yisame. Of course, an amazing pshat from the Ralbag, the Rav Ben Gershom, one of the Rishonim, where the Ralbag writes that the air was taka so thick with these vapors or smokes or whatever you want to call them exactly, that the Egyptians had to plug their nostrils and mouths for the duration of 3 days. And you know, that's what essentially immobilized them, because they were just trying to stay put because of these dangerous noxious fumes that were in the environment, preventing them from being able to move around in any way. So, says that Sava Kabbalah, interesting, but how do you plug up your nostrils and mouth for 3 days and live to tell the tale? That doesn't sound like that should be possible. I mean, then you're saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously kept the Egyptians alive during the Makkos Choshech. You know, you have to start reading a lot of stuff into the story, which is hard to explain. L'chein Omar, Rav Naftali Vesli, he quotes Rav Naftali Vesli, was an interesting, controversial figure, someone who later on in life was associated with the Haskalah movement. But apparently the Aksava Kabbalah wrote his sefer, he felt comfortable enough with this Rav Naftali Vesli that he felt comfortable quoting him. So he writes as follows: the MS had Torah sosmo dvoreho. The truth is, the Torah doesn't really explain exactly what was going on with this choshech. And what do you mean, lo kamu ish mitachtov? However, Kabbalah hadavar mafurosh. But in Kabbalah, by Kabbalah over here, he doesn't mean mysticism. He means the oral tradition which we have. The oral tradition which we have about how the Makos took place will help us understand what was going on. Ki hamishorir omar, because we find in Tehillim, Kapitel Ayin Ches, which describes the plagues in Mitzrayim, we find the following: Yishalach bo mcharon apo evra vozam v'tzara mishlachas malachei yoim. God in Mitzrayim sent against the Egyptians Charon Apo, his burning anger, Evra, Vizoam, Vitzara, indignation, anger, difficulties, and Mishlachas Malachei Roim, and an envoy of evil angels, of deadly angels, that were sent against the Egyptian people while they were in Mitzrayim. Now this is a pasuk which we probably know, either because we're Tillim Zogers, but even if you're not a Tillim Zoger, you may know it just from the Haggadah Shel Pesach, right? In other words, this is the pasuk which is darshened by some of the Tanoim to indicate that the plagues in Mitzrayim had four or five different parts that were associated with them. You know, Yishalach Bom, Charon Apo, Evra, Vazam, Vitzara, Mishlachas Malachei Roim, depending on how you count the various components of that pasuk. You know, there are different components to the plagues, which meant that, you know, the 10 plagues really come out to be 40 plagues, 50 plagues, you know, depending on how you look at it. What is Mishlachas Malachei Roim? I mean, when we read it in the Haggadah, we don't really care what it is. We just care that it's a number. You know, there's this number and that number and the other number. What's Mishlachas Malachei Roim? A group of destroying angels that were sent against the Egyptians. So he says as follows: In Yom Mishlachas Malachei Roim Sha'amar Masharuhu Ba'atzma Masha'amar B'Sefer Chochmas Shlomo. The Sefer Chochmas Shlomo explains that Mishlachas Malachei Roim is as follows: Vayoshimu Vayiboalu Me'od. The Pasuk in Tehillim goes on to say that the Vayishomu Vayiboalu Me'od, that the Egyptians were incredibly frightened. Vayechadu Mitzmunos Zoros. They were frightened by foreign images, strange images that they saw. Ach kolos shonos, homus tvivoseim lahafchidom. When the Egyptians sat in the darkness, they saw strange things, they heard strange things. Umalachei roim zoafei ponim niru lomo. And they had visions of frightening angels that were sent around them. You know, Mashalom Adav Adomah, you know, you're out camping in the woods and it's dark and it's scary, and all of a sudden there's a howl, all of a sudden you see something moving among the trees, you know, and if you were to see a vision of something scary at that point, beyond the darkness itself, these sights and sounds would be terrifying. The 3 days of Choshech were not just, or the week of Choshech, depending how we understand it, the days of Choshech, as the Egyptians experienced it, were not simply, you know, boring days where they sat in the dark. Okay, you know, I wish I had my phone on me, you know, so I could have something to do during this period of time. It wasn't just boring days. It was days sitting in the dark, surrounded by scary noises and scary sights, and every once in a while, out of the darkness, would pop up some kind of scary, ghostly image that the Egyptians would experience during the course of the Makkos Choshech. So not only were they without light, but they were being terrified during the course of during the course of the plague. That's Mishlachas Malachei Roim. A group of horrifying angels was sent to the Egyptians at that time. Hine nechredu mechazyono zoro shiro'u. The Egyptians were frightened by all of these strange apparitions, all of these strange sights that they saw. Veheim maros shono shiniru lem lavisom. These were different things, strange things that were sent to the Egyptians to frighten them. Mizer yosto libo merov pachad. Their hearts almost gave out with fear during the course of that time. And again, you know, the truth is, it's a form of torture. You know, you lock somebody in a darkened room and you start having strange noises. You know, if anyone ever went for an MRI, right? So, you know, to some extent, that for some people have that kind of that feeling. You know, it's claustrophobic, it's dark, you know, and you're hearing weird noises and sounds and things like that, you know. So imagine being in the MRI for a week, right? And that's what the Makkos Choshech is. That's what he's describing. You know.
Are we saying that these bad angels were saying they were palpable?
I mean, again, I don't know that they were able to touch them, but they saw something. You know, they saw something that was scary.
Doesn't it go against what we think of angels as? Bad angels.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Right.
I'm not an angel expert, but you know, whatever these things were, they saw visions during that period of time that were frightening visions, terrifying visions, right? Of faith, kocham ashlo yochulis no neam imakomam, says Rav Naphtali Vesely. So that's what transfixed the Egyptians to their spots. In other words, it wasn't, you know, that physically they were immobilized. There was nothing about the air quality, you know, that somehow kept them in place. But here you are, you're sitting in the darkness, all of a sudden, you know, it's like a haunted house where, you know, you're hearing noises, right? I'm sorry?
And you're completely isolated.
Right, you're isolated, there are noises, there's sounds, there are images, you know, it's terrifying. So nobody wanted to move, people were terrified, they couldn't move. You know, you thought to yourself, okay, if it's bad in here in my house, what's going to happen if I start walking out to the streets? It's probably going to get worse. So they were immobilized by fear, not by anything
paralyzed
physical.
Paralyzed,
right. They were paralyzed by fear. Kimo sheyikre la'odom nivhal mishoas pison kistavuenu shelo yamosh mimakomo meyob cher the slave. Exactly. You know, just as we see today, that a person will be so astonished by something sudden that will come upon him that he won't be able to move. Again, paralyzed by fear. The fact that they didn't get up during that period of time was because they didn't have the inner spirit to be able to stand up. They were paralyzed because of what was going on all around them. So that in itself is a very interesting interpretation. But the Haksav HaKabbalah then takes it and moves it a step further and actually roots it into the Psukim in Chumash. I mean, so far the interpretation that they saw all kinds of visions and the like has no you know, no echo in the words of the Chumash. It's entirely based on that pasuk in Tehillim that speaks about the Mishlachas Malachei Royim, the evil angels being sent against the Egyptians. But says Aksav HaKabbalah, I think it's really in Chumash. How so? Uladaiti inyan ze atzma mavua b'milas mitachtov she'omar kro v'lo kamu ish mitachtov. Now, what does mitachtov mean? So mitachtov, the simple interpretation is no one got up from his seat. No one got up from that which was tachas underneath the person. Right? Notice nobody rose from their seat for the duration of the plague. But says the Yaksav HaKabbal, I'd like to propose an alternative explanation. It's not related to the word seat, tachas, aval hu shem davar min techos. It's a noun which is related to techos. Techos means fear. No man stood up mitachtov because of their fears. And he goes on to say as follows, right? So he says, for instance, you have a pasuk in Chavakuk, right? Or he says the pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Yitzayim. Techos ge'ara b'meivin. When you admonish an understanding person, techos, it makes him tremble, it makes him fear, right? Spelled the same way as tachas, but just with different nekudos, with different vowels. Or tachas oven, ro'isi ahale kushon, right? A pasuk from Chavakuk, we lane it on the second day Shavuos. Right, so what does it mean? Tachas oven, ro'isi ahale kushon. So I have the Mefarshim over there explain that I have seen the tent of Kushan of a certain foreign nation, tachas oven, trembling and fearful because of their iniquities, because of their sins. There too, in the pasuk, the word tachas does not mean underneath or below the way it's normally translated, but it's related to this notion of fear. And in fact, for the for the icing on the cake, says the Aksav HaKabbalah, we had a pasuk just a few weeks ago in the Parshas HaShavua with a very unusual translation of Targum Onkelos, which also points to this idea that sometimes the word tachas can be interpreted as fear as opposed to below or underneath. Right? So in the very end of Chumash, right? So the brothers come to Yosef HaTzadik, and Yaakov has just passed away. The brothers come to Yosef HaTzadik, and they plead with him not to punish them for the sin that they did, selling him into slavery. And Yosef says, look, you have nothing to worry about. Ki hasachas Elokim oni. Sachas Elokim onochi. The standard interpretation is, what do you think? I'm instead of God? Do you think I take the place of God? Tachas meaning underneath or replacement for. Do you think I take the place of God? The Unculus over there translates the word Hatachas Elokim Onochi as Dachalo de Hashem Ano. I am one who fears God. And the Rav Sadia Gaon similarly interprets the pasuk in that fashion. Now we know the Targum Unculus, typically speaking, is a very literal translation. Very rarely does the Targum Onkelos engage in homiletic interpretations or the like. It's a very, very literal interpretation. So how do you connect, Dachalo Dashem Ano, I fear God, to the words Hatachas Elokim Onochi? Says the Aksav HaKabbalah, it only works if you interpret the word Tachas in that pasuk not as underneath or below or instead of, but rather fearful of. Hatachas Elokim Onochi. I am a tachas, I am one who fears Elokim. I am one who fears Hashem.
But he's saying it as a question.
How do you know? What, you saw the question mark in the Chumash? Right? In other words, that Hagufa, right? In other words, we interpret it as a question because that's how we understand hatachas instead of, in the sense of instead of, right? But hatachas Elokim Onochi, he goes on to say that the hay sometimes can play the, oftentimes hay makes the statement into a question, the hay at the beginning of the word, hatachas Elokim Onochi. But he goes on to quote other examples where the hay doesn't necessarily indicate a question, right? But it could just be a statement, right? So Hatachas Elokim Anochi, again, the uncle seems to understand, you know, I am one who fears God. Not as a question, you know, it's a statement. You know, I fear God. So over here as well, V'chein Milas Mitachtov, coming back to us, and the Makas Choshech, V'lo Kamo Ish Mitachtov, no one stood up, Mitachtov need not mean from his seat, but no man stood up, Mitachtov, because of his fears. Misibas Pachad, they were so fearful because of these things that they saw and heard around them, they couldn't bring themselves up because of that. And the prefix mem in mitachtov means on account of. No one stood up on account of their fears. Then he goes out a little further. Just, you know, so what he's done is he's taken this interpretation based on the Pasuk in Tehillim and rooted it in the very Chumash itself, that no one stood up because of their fears. And then he goes on to even bring it into the Chumash a little bit further. Maybe the word kamu, no one stood up, doesn't refer to physical posture. In other words, up until now we've been assuming the Egyptians were immobilized for the duration of the Makas Choshech. Why were they immobilized? So he went on to give this, you know, novel interpretation that they were immobilized by fear because of the things that they saw happening around them. But you know what? Maybe they weren't immobilized at all. So what does Lokamu mean? They didn't stand up. We sometimes find that Kamu means that they had no courage for the duration of the Makkah. We sometimes find that the word nefila, falling, doesn't mean a physical fall, but it rather means a loss of courage, a loss of spirit. We sometimes find similarly that standing up, lakum, means to be courageous, to be brave, without fears. For instance, va'oleches chem komemius. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises Klal Yisrael, if we do the will of God, He's going to cause us to walk upright. What does that mean? So God's interested in our posture? No, it means that we're going to walk without fear. You know, we use the expression in English, head held high. Right? It's an expression of your psychological state. It's not an expression of your physical state. Right? Or when Yoshua sends the two spies into Eretz Yisrael to Yericho, at the very beginning of Sefer Yericho, so they are told, "Vayimaslev Avenu below Kama Oruach Beish." Rachav tells them, "No one's spirit stood up within him anymore." What does that mean? Again, it's a statement of the psychological state of the people in Eretz Yisrael, not of their physical posture. No one's spirit stood up. In other words, no one had any courage anymore after they heard the news that the Jews were on their way into Eretz Yisrael. So perhaps that's what's going on over here. Chitas v'cherdos harishoyim ho'ele asher nafal aleim be'es ha'choshech hikasa osam v'sipkam. Right? The fear that struck the Egyptians at this time made them into a, they gave them a situation, they created a situation for lo kamu ish mitachtov. No one had any courage because of the fears which they experienced. And maybe they were moving around, maybe they weren't immobilized the way we typically understand that pasuk. But whether or not they were physically moving around, certainly psychologically, you know, in terms of their, you know, their courage and their readiness, you know, to face the next day, they were immobilized in spirit. They were paralyzed in spirit. You know, even if we're not going to say that they were paralyzed in a physical, bodily kind of sense. So again, it's a very, very, you know, unique and you know, different way of looking at the pasuk, but ultimately relating a pasuk in Tehillim that the Haggadah speaks to, that the Haggadah quotes, you know, to the pasuk in Chumash itself, and giving us some new insights into you know, words which we thought we understood, but now we're looking at in a totally different fashion. Be'ezus Hashem, will pick up following Ma'ariv with another vort from the Aksava Kabbalah. We'll see one another then. Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, welcome to the second part of the Shia Aksava Kabbalah Parshas Bo. wanted to take a look at a Ksava Kabbalah on Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Yud Gimel, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is relating to Moshe Rabbeinu to relate to Klal Yisrael all of the halachos that are relevant to Pesach, and specifically, you know, what they're supposed to do that fateful night, that first Pesach, the Pesach Mitzrayim, where they have all special instructions. And they're told that they have to put the blood on their doorposts. V'hoyo adam lochem lo'os al abotim asher atem shom. The blood should be a sign on the houses in which you are located. V'ro'isiyas adam ufosachti aleichem. So Hashem says, I will see the blood and ufosachti. Usually translated, I will skip over, I will pass over. Hence the name, over you. There will be no destruction against you as I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pass through Egypt looking to destroy it. Writes the Aksava Kabbalah, Hakoshi Mefursam. The question on this pasuk is a famous one, namely, what exactly is the point of putting the blood on the doorpost? What is it looking to accomplish? HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs a sign to indicate which are the Jewish houses and which are the Egyptian houses. That was the simple interpretation of the pasuk, is put the blood on the doors, and that way HaKadosh Baruch Hu will easily be able to keep track as he goes through Mitzrayim to know where to smite and where not to smite. And of course, you know, it's mind-boggling to imagine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu somehow needs some blood on the doorposts in order to figure out whether it's a Jewish home or an Egyptian home. The Eiror Kemo Shekostav Harav Bino Le'itim, he quotes Sefer Bino Le'itim written by Rav Azariah Figo, where he says as follows: Ki be'emes hayu b'Yisrael dvarim monim ha-ge'ula. The Jews were not so picture perfect at this moment, right before they were about to go out of Mitzrayim. There are many, many things that the Jews were deficient in that, you know, really made them not really fit on a certain level to be redeemed from Egypt. Kemo she'omer Rav Hoseinu, as Chazal say, quotes Shir HaShirim Rabbah, Shahayu of the Alilim Kimitzriim. They were idol worshippers just like the Egyptians were. I mean, we know famously Chazal say that as the Jews went through the Yamsuf, the Malachim cried out before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Halalei of the Avodah Zarah, Halalei of the Avodah Zarah. I don't see what the difference is between the Jews and the Egyptians. They're both idol worshippers. So why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu show any favoritism towards the Jews versus the Egyptians? V'hayo ritzono yisbarach l'tayr avon l'nakosam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to purify the Jews and to cleanse them. So therefore, v'tziva aleim Karban Pesach. That's why God gave the Jewish people the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. V'zeh yoru hara gimur kishavu midakem hara. By bringing the Karban Pesach, the Jews showed that they had done tshuva, that they had repented from all the idolatry they had engaged in. V'shchitas ho Eloha atzmo sher hoyu ovdim oso. We know, after all, that the sheep was a god to the Egyptians. When we say that Jews worshipped Avodah Zarah in Mitzrayim, it very likely means that they worshipped that Avodah Zarah, that they worshipped the same god that the Egyptians were worshipping. So by slaughtering the god itself, the deity itself, so this way the Jews would prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that they had abandoned the path of Avodah Zarah. V'hinei os ho'avo ha'shleim of asimen ha'gomur. The way you show that you really love someone or something is to do something that shows that you're ready to do anything to actualize that love, and nothing makes you fearful, nothing makes you afraid or hesitant to show, to demonstrate your love for that thing or for that entity. You'd even put your life in danger in order to carry out the will of that whom you love. L'chaim stipa hu yisprach she has to give a pulos b'svichas o aloha shalom mitzrim l'aynem b'firsum gado v'lo yoshisu leiv ala sakono atzuma pen yecher af mitzrayim aleyem bir osam elbon yir osam yakumu aleyem ashmidom. So therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked the Jewish people to display their great love for him. How would they do that? He asked them to do three things that would show that they had, you know, that they were ready to show their devotion to God and their disdain for the Egyptian idolatry without any fear whatsoever. Earlier, last week's Ezra, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, if the Jews were to shecht the Egyptian god, the sheep, in the presence of the Egyptians, after all, would stone them. And yet, here they are, you know, only a short time later, doing exactly that. They're shechting the god of the Egyptians. They're slaughtering the god of the Egyptians. Im kozelo yinu milalos rison hamitzaver b'shvakim uverechovos b'fisoi v'kolon. Nonetheless, the Jews here did not hesitate to follow the will of God. They publicly slaughtered the Korban Pesach in the open areas without regard for their safety. Ad havium osol beisam b'kolikolos v'lo yiru min amitzrim. And more than that, they would bring home the sheep would bleat, you know, on their way into the house, but the Jews didn't care. Yes, Ken Yishkwa Tesach the Knufyo of Esa Gado. Besides the fact that everything was done in public, the Jews themselves gathered in great numbers to shech the Korban Pesach. Mishpachos bepirsum. You weren't allowed to just have the Korban Pesach in a little corner by yourself. Whole families gathered to eat the Korban Pesach, to shecht it, and to eat it together. Despite the fact that they're having these big family get-togethers, again, very, very public, but they didn't show any fear. But the last thing that they did to show their absolute lack of fear was the most significant. Kilo daylem b'chol eila b'chol zeh. Avogam achakach be'is achlam also yifarsemula kilyon be'neim l'davo nevesh amitzriyim. They were ready, even as they ate the Korban Pesach, to demonstrate how unafraid of the Egyptians they were. How did they do that? B'sito midomo amishkof amashkofei habatim amezuzos la'enei kol over. By putting the blood on the outside of the door, they basically waved a flag and said to the Egyptians, we killed your God, and we don't care. You're not going to be able to touch us. Right? We have no fear for our safety. We love our God. We killed your God. And here's the blood on the doorpost as the proof that, you know, we are not afraid of anything that you could possibly do to us. The Egyptians knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Jews were eating their deity. Halo yinatku marshe levavam lehikohem lavo aleihem b'charvos v'ramachim v'linkom b'sof b'nei Yisrael. Ordinarily you'd say the Egyptians would gather against the Jews with swords, with spears, to try to kill them. Hinei b'choze yasu ritzon konav lo yir marach b'levavam. The Jews said, we don't care, we're going to do God's will, and we're going to put the blood on the outsides of their doors. Uvezeh os nifla shlemus hatshuva v'idavkam bo yisparach. And therefore the blood was the greatest sign. The sign of what? It was the greatest sign of the devotion of the Jews to Hashem and their utter rejection of Avodah Zarah. So says the Aksava Kabbalah, when the Pasuk says the blood will be for you a sign, what do you mean it will be for you a sign? Not that it's going to be a sign to signal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, oh, this is a Jewish home, and therefore jump over, right? Pass over it, skip over it. No. The blood will be a sign of your devotion. And because the blood is a sign of your devotion, because of the fact that you show that you have this great love for your God, that itself will cause God's mercy to be aroused and to spare you of the terrible plague that otherwise would have befallen you. In other words, you choose by yourselves. You needed a schus, you needed a source of merit. You're so devoted to God that you're ready to slaughter the deity of the Egyptians
and put the blood for all to see on the outside of the doors, that's a sign, not for God. That's a sign of your devotion. Ayah Adam Lachem Laos. It will be for you a sign about you and about your inner strength. And that will lead HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have the mercy upon you, which you need at this point in time. So v'ra'isi b'mechilta, he says, I saw in the Mechilta, in the Medrash, the Amar of Yitzchak Shaidam, lo haya b'fnim ela b'chus, ki yishiru ha-mitzrim, u'mischatchichim b'nei meyayim. Mechilta says the blood was davka on the outside of the doors, so that the Egyptians should see, and their innards should churn inside of them. They should be eaten up. The Egyptians will be, gnashing their teeth, because of the blood of their God that they see outside. Is there mamish kidvareinu? And this is exactly the way we're saying that the blood is not some kind of reminder to God. The blood is a symbol, is a sign of the devotion of the Jewish people.
I wanted to ask you, once Moshe came, the Klal Yisrael, at first they didn't believe him, and then the Mako started. Didn't they give up their old way in terms of
Avodah Zarah
and everything?
Right. So did the Jews give up Avodah Zarah as they watched the Makos unfolding in front of them?
Yeah.
So it could be that the answer is no, because again, remember, in biblical times, believing in God and worshipping Avodah Zarah are not seen as two contradictions. Avodah Zarah just is a way of approaching God through an intermediary. So it's possible that they believed in Hashem, but they also still worshipped Avodah Zarah. It's possible. But beyond that, let's say they did give up Avodah Zarah. It's one thing to say, you know what, I'm not going to subscribe to Avodah Zarah weekly anymore. Okay, it's not such a big mysterious nefesh. It does require the person to engage in self-sacrifice. You show, there isn't really such a publication as far as I'm aware. It's a much bigger act of self-sacrifice to do what the Jews were asked to do, to actually proactively kill the Avodah Zarah of the Egyptians and spread the blood on the outside of the doorpost. So this is the first time that they're not just being passive, they're being active in terms of what they're asked to do. So he goes on a little bit further. The karov lomar ki inyan v'ro'isi kan hu kamo yeira paro ish novo. But the pasuk shot in the pasuk says v'ro'isi es adam, says Hashem, I will see the blood. And again, that suggests this idea that until God sees the blood, God, as it were, is not able, chas v'shalom, to tell the difference between a Jewish home and an Egyptian home. So says Aksava Kabbalah, no, v'ro'isi sometimes means that I will appoint. So for instance, after interpreting the dreams of Paro, Yosef says, Yere Paro ish novon. Let Paro literally see a wise person. It doesn't mean let him see a wise person. Let him appoint a wise person. The Tamo Bokharti Lios Hadam Lochem Laos. V'ro'isi es Hadam means HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will choose the blood. I will appoint the blood to be a sign of your devotion. I will recognize, the word recognize in English can mean recognize in a physical sense. It could also mean recognize in a sort of metaphysical sense, right? Says Hashem, I will recognize the blood as a sign of your devotion. V'ro'isi es Hadam. And that's what it means, v'ro'isi es Hadam, that I will see the blood. Then he goes on with the following, which is very fundamental to the very name of Pesach itself. The pasuk says, "Ufosachti aleichem." So some of Farshim understand "Ufosachti" means I will skip over, I will pass over, I will jump over that house. The Aksava Kabbalah strenuously objects to that interpretation, and he prefers an interpretation that the Targum uses, the Targum Onkelos uses, and other Mefarshim use as well. Rashi at one point alludes to this as well, that Ufosachti, as per the Targum, means Ve'echos, I will pity, right? I will show compassion. So V'ro'isi es Hadam, I will recognize the value of that blood as a sign of your devotion. Ufosachti aleichem, and I will have compassion upon you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya Lamed Aleph, Posoach v'himlit, also it's the lashon of compassion. And he says, you can't say that it means Passover. How could the Pasuk possibly describe God in such human terms so as to describe him as passing over the house? It's an overly humanistic way of referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chein karban anasa b'chag nikra b'shem Pesach. The karban, as we know, the sacrifice which is associated with the Yom Tov, is called the karban Pesach because it's the karban of compassion. It's the karban that that indicated that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had compassion upon us in Mitzrayim, did not kill us and allow us to go out, you know, and leave the servitude of Egypt. So again, he quotes the Targum ve'echos for Yisias Adam ve'echos. Yeah, no. It's not to say that it is the same as ve'echos, but in other words, you know, we find, you know, he's saying that the Targum sees the word Pesach as ve'echos. In other words, the type of fosachti is ve'echos. You know that I will. So in other words, we find. I'm sorry?
Rashi rejects it, he alluded to it, but
right.
Then they reject it.
So again, he's you know, granted, Rishonim say that Ufosachti means I will pass over, I will jump over. Daksava Kabbalah, though, is so reluctant, you know, to use any kind of term that would portray HaKadosh Baruch Hu in human terms whatsoever, that he's not comfortable b'chlal with that interpretation. Notwithstanding the Rishonim, you know, that use that you know, that interpretation of what Ufosachti ultimately was. What's that? Right, no, so it comes out, you know, when you see something as kosher for Passover, you'd have to rename it as kosher for compassion. You know, compassionate and kosher, I guess. So that's what would come out over here. Al Kopanim, it certainly, I think it does, you know, it does speak in a very, very profound way about the name of the Yom Tov itself. Pesach, according to this interpretation, is the Yom Tov of compassion. It's the Yom Tov where we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's compassion on us, you know, and, you know, that I think colors in some way the way we look at the observance of the Yom Tov. Pesach, we'll pick up next week, again Wednesday night, and I wish everyone a good Shabbat.